Flashback Twin Cities. Tom Osmond here on KLBB, Club 1220. We're taking a step back into about the 1940s of radio because we actually have a live studio audience and a whole orchestra in the studio today that we're going to be cutting back to. So if you hear applause and laughter today, it is not a canned audio bit that I have. This is actually a live studio audience. We're actually prepping for Newsapalooza by bringing live people in to make sure that what I say is not only accurate but funny, which could fall flat on both. We'll find out. Great guest today. I have Tom Hanneman of Fox Sports. Now, you're of Fox Sports North now. You were with the Timberwolves, and now you're with Fox Sports North the last 2 years.
The last couple of years with Fox Sports North, 23 with the Timberwolves, and then prior to that, 16 at WCCO-TV.
And you were a sportscaster, a producer, a reporter. You did everything at WCCO-TV.
When you are working your way up the ladder from a University of Minnesota student, you do everything. You say no to nothing, and you listen to all the experience around you, and it was a great place to begin to learn the business. I have no question that when I was hired, when I finished at the U, there were better candidates. But what helped me is I'd been there as a radio dispatcher, listening to police radios and whatnot, sending folks out on spot news. They knew me, and I think the thought was, well, let's give this kid a chance and throw him a bone, and that's really what happened. And I had the benefit of, you know, a group of reporters that about 15 of them, most of them ended up working at the network level, and some pretty amazing people. So as much as the University of Minnesota was my place of education, WCCO was as well.
Well, and the great thing about that is, if you think about it, Minneapolis was not a small market station at the time, and this is the golden age of TV news in the 70s when profits were going up. Mm-hmm. The station branding, it was not just a informational public service of the station. It was actually a money-making profit center. And you and Mark Rosen were both, we'll call them better or worse, kids off the street. Didn't go to Brown, didn't go to Sioux City or do that that tour of duty in the Midwest or Duluth, for that matter. You came right into a big metro market station, and I'm guessing within a few weeks or years, here's a microphone, go do some reporting.
Yeah, Mark's story is different in that Phil Jones was a neighbor of his, Phil Jones, who became a White House correspondent for CBS News, and allowed him to come in and, you know, as a teenager to look around, and obviously Mark had great passion, as I did, for sports, and hung around, and, you know, it was free work, I think, for CCO to have some of these youngsters. But in my case, I wrote Dave Moore a letter, and he responded. I still have that letter. It means a great deal to me. Took me on a tour of CCO TV. I was in awe. I mean, this was local television anchors were stars in my eyes, and that was a very, very big deal. So I was recommended for the dispatcher job, which I believe paid $1.35 an hour. So I was getting wealthy and spent a lot of my free time not working at the U at the station, and it took years. There are some advantages, I think, to going to smaller markets because they throw you in the water and you sink or swim, and you find out you make your mistakes. At a place like CCO or KSTP or WTCN, Care 11 now, you make one mistake as a young reporter, and that might be it, or producer. So they bring you along a lot slower. The advantage there is you learn all of the lower aspects, the producing end of things, which was really, I think, beneficial for me.
And I guess the only saving grace is now in this era, you make a mistake on air, it's going to be living infamy forever. if I happen to find a tape, I may make someone's life miserable. If I find someone's
I know that. I know
but,
that.
But, however, what a great experience, though, to be able to, and first of all, as a sports enthusiast, to be able to report on your hometown teams in the market you grew up in. I think that, we have some sophisticated sports fans, even in our audience today, who can tell that when you have out-of-towners that come in through a consulting company that say, this guy is going to report your sports, and this guy is now your biggest Vikings fan, or he can report on the Vikings. Viewers can tell if someone actually has, you know, and I think of the Jeff Passelt, Mark Rosens, and yourself, and people that actually, you know, grew up here. When you're reporting on Bud Grant or reporting on Harmon Killebrew, you actually grew up, I won't say idolizing these guys, but these are people you knew, you rooted for, and then you're reporting on them. And you can tell that as
well. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Sometimes it just takes somebody saying Edina because they don't know how to pronounce it. I heard someone years ago talk about the great U.S. Olympic hockey player Neil Brotan.
Right, right.
So, yeah, those things stand out. And it's unfortunate, but it's there. And for those of us that grew up in Minnesota, it stands out, and it's that one strike sometimes that you always realize, oh, he's not from here, he does. But there are advantages. And, yeah, someone like Bud Grant, at the very start of my career, you had a chance to be part of that pile of reporters, and you were terrified that you would ask the wrong question because Bud would point it out to you and wasn't afraid at all. So you're shaking in your boots a little bit, but that was a good thing. You don't want to idolize the people that you cover, and yet I think at the very beginning there were some that I did,
which is okay because there were some glory times in the 70s. There were four Super Bowls that happened.
Oh yeah,
that you covered a couple of those, I believe.
Yep. I was never on site. You know, when you're a low man on the totem pole, you don't get that opportunity. But to be around some of the individuals that I really felt were luminaries, and Hal Scott, who was a longtime sports director, and his brother Ray, some of the great people in the history of television here locally and TV sports, a lot of reporters. And you mentioned some people, Jeff Passolt, who was working at Carol Evan, Randy Shaver. There are a variety of people that worked for the competition, but you were closer to them because you were competing against them. And back then, it was competition. It really did mean something. And there was a sense of they are the enemy and do not. Well, these guys were your buddies. You were out on the road doing the same stories, doing them in your own way. Rob Lear as well at KS. But when the day was done, you know, you could go back and have a beer or whatever and sit and chat about, and you got to know them a lot better.
You weren't reporting by computer, and that is one of the great differences. And unfortunately, just now with the way, in local stations, the budget does not qualify for to have a lot of people out traveling with the team because you can watch the game in HD, which might, some could say, arguably better than watching it on the stands. You were in a world where you actually had to physically be there to get a, we'll call it a scoop, or get an inside story. And that had to have been a very exciting, heart-pumping moment because I think it's exciting when I can find a tweet that I can, tweet before someone else finds some link that people find interesting. You're actually out there on the ground doing that.
It was entirely different. And the way the news was done, the way sports was reported was entirely different, too. And I think in some ways today is better. This was an era where athletes and anchors were out at Duff's downtown together drinking in the evening, and secrets were kept. There are no secrets kept today, believe me. If a reporter has a chance, or anyone has a chance to break any information about what someone has done, it's going to be broken.
Let me ask a question. We find a lot of, right now, the last couple of years, seems like there's been, and I use the term loosely, scandals of athletes getting involved in some criminal activity. Do you think that the same amount of activity has been going on since the beginning of sports, but right now, because nothing is secret, everything is on video, everything is being recorded, someone is transmitting something someone's doing, do you think that's always been with the same level of problems in any organization, but just because right now we have just so many more, and this can be politics or sports,
right,
which are sometimes the same
thing. Yes.
people just find out more about it because the information carries faster and more vividly.
There's no question that is a large part of it. I couldn't tell you the percentage, although we know as you read and look back in the 20s, Babe Ruth's era, there were things going on then that might not be considered as horrible back then as they are now, but I think that the way our world is being covered and reported has changed. I mean, yes, before computers, before cell phones, we're going back to, that's another major change in terms of how instant things are. And there were a lot of people in my generation that crossed their eyes with Twitter saying, oh, the aha moment for me was about 6 years ago covering an NBA draft. And I'm back at Target Center, and I see information that's coming through half an hour before it's anywhere, on any national broadcast, half an hour. And timing in this business, news, sports, or otherwise, that's king. So I thought, okay, here we go. This is happening, and this is something that you have to invest in. I'm not interested in sharing what I'm eating for lunch, but I am interested in finding out when something's occurring from the people that are around the team. There's a lot of people that have joined the party who aren't necessarily directly contacted with these athletes or teams, but there's value in it.
You've been a journalist in multiple number of eras, and eras actually, and I don't mean era by generation, because I think that generations are getting smaller now, because I think that a generation could be 5 years ago. 5 years ago, no one knew what Twitter was. 5 years ago, people had Facebook, but people weren't using Facebook for news.
Right.
They're using Facebook to decide what they had for lunch today and to ask what a good hotel in Italy was. Facebook today is now where we get our news from. Unfortunately, more so than not. As a survivor, and people, I think people in the show that say, if only we went back to the old days, things would be better. Well, the old days aren't coming back. And this may seem counterproductive to my website, which I glorify the old days. But it's to look at it and also to look forward. Also to look at how things were, how things are the same, and how things can be. If you join what old journalism skills are, new technology, I think there's a lot of ground to be broken still.
Oh, there's no question. And you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. There are some great things today that are going on, and the technology. It's just that there's some decision making as to this is not profitable. We're not going to have a group of reporters working in an investigative team and spending half a year trying to come up with something that might not happen. That doesn't happen anymore. A young sports reporter isn't allowed to basically crisscross the country doing features for a state high school hockey tournament, which I was allowed, going to the East Coast, the West Coast. You come up with ideas, they're approved, boom, you're gone. It was an exciting and great time to be part of things. So that part of it's changed. I think that, the entertainment end of it, Entertainment Tonight didn't exist. There's a brand, and people are interested in that. I personally am not as interested in that in watching the nightly news, but I'm in a minority now. That end of things has changed. So there are great things today as there were in days gone by. But for all of us, no matter what your age is, if you're looking back to a time that seems so simple, and it wasn't as simple if you were living it, but the friends you had in high school, that's what high school reunions are all about, going back, reliving, and thinking about how great it was and how simple it was, and I wish we were back there when, in fact, when you were living that time, it didn't seem so great.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess Tom Hanneman of Fox Sports North. Tom, I want to play a clip, and then we'll go to a break. This clip is from May 20th, 1979, and we, on the MNN news update, I learned that it's been 10 years since the Red Lake shooting in 2005, when unfortunate tragedy with someone taking out many, many students, and then luckily there was a teacher instructor up there, which basically came in there and saved from part of the carnage. You yourself were on an assignment with Keith Brown in this date, and I'm going to play the audio, but I want you to give me some more context of what actually happened here.
WCCO Television, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
From WCCO Television, the Northwest's leading news station, this is the 10 p.m. report.
Everyone, an ammonia spill in North Branch forced an evacuation of the town's residents, but ends without a tragedy. Minnesota legislators are working long hours this weekend to try and finish their business before the Monday adjournment deadline. And thunderstorm activity sends a quarter inch hail and 50-mile winds into some areas of the Twin Cities.
But topping the news tonight, what began as a dispute among members of the Red Lake Band of the Chippewa Indians ended today in a shootout and takeover of the Indian Bureau Law Enforcement Center. At about 5:15 this morning, a group of dissidents from that band took four police officers hostage. They were locked in a cell. And for the next hour, the demonstrators went on and fired shots into the air using guns and ammunition found inside of that law enforcement building. And then they sent word that they would give up if their demands were met. Demands that included the reinstatement of Stephanie Hansen as the tribal treasurer. By the time the federal officials arrived on the scene, all of the hostages had been released. We say all of the hostages. We're not too sure now as we get a report from our Tom Hanneman, who was at that Red Lake Center. And Tom, tell us your story.
Well, Don, we arrived in Red Lake around 4 o'clock this afternoon. Keith Brown, photographer Keith Brown and myself. We found that the main road of leading into Red Lake was blocked by a Red Lake fire truck. We got out of the car to shoot some scenes of the police station, which was still smoldering. And at that time, we heard shots fired and some ricochets off the fire engine we were standing next to. Obviously, we were being shot at. So we threw our hands up, and a group of Indians came and wanted to know what we were doing. We explained, and we left that area to go on to shoot some more scenes. And Keith Brown drove to a back road to shoot the police station, and also a police car that was aflame, an abandoned police car. He went into the woods and came running back a few moments later. They had fired on him, and the bullets hit the water right in front of his feet. We had three incidents, Don, that happened this afternoon. The third was by far the worst. We were about ready to leave the area, and Keith was going to shoot the final shot of the main street. I was in the car. Keith was outside with the back door open. And at that moment, I heard a sound like a rock hitting the side of the car. It was a bullet that hit the door, ricocheted up, and Keith says it missed his head by no more than 2 inches. An Indian came at us at that time with a pistol, ordered us out of the car, and at gunpoint had Keith smash our videotape camera and the tape recorder onto the road. He then had us lay in the road in the median, threatened to blow our heads off, holding the gun at our heads, tormented us for a while, then got into our rented car, turned around toward the road, sped up, what seemed to me an obvious attempt to run us over. I got up. I just couldn't sit there and let him go at me. And again, he told me to lay down and drove by and again threatened us many times with the gun to our heads.
I'll make sure the audience knows this is not a current event. This is a 35-year-old event. But I want to, in the life of a lot of sports journalists that I bring on here, this is one of the most, and first of all, I appreciate you having this videotape because this video is now on TC Media Now. It's one of the highest watched videos we have. And this is not normal for a sports producer to be put in this kind of situation, nor for any local reporter or producer or anchor to be put in this position. Tell me a little bit about how that day started.
Well, I was working as a sports reporter, and I was out on a story with Keith Brown, the photographer, and the individual who was supposed to be working news that day called in sick. So this story broke in Red Lake, and it was pretty serious. They had no one to go, and I volunteered. So that's how I ended up there. Our problem was we beat the FBI to the scene because the FBI hours later set up a roadblock so no poor souls would drive into the area where gunfire was active. So that's how it started. I think I can't believe looking back I used the verb shoot when I'm talking about scenes, and back then the word Indian was used as opposed to Native American. Those things have changed, but what hasn't changed was the really the terror of that day and the sense of relief and luck that you got through it. We did witness young teenager lose his life that day just through stray gunfire in the streets, and that's something that never leaves your mind. You never let something like that pass. So horrific scenario, and I can say this, and I don't know many people in this position, when there's people thought, well, you know, here was a guy inebriated, why didn't you jump him? Well, there was no opportunity. The story that was reported that day didn't include a lot of things, like a bullet shot into the seat through the front windshield next to me. And some of the language, obviously, was edited as well for television. But I know what the feeling is when you believe this is it, when you believe there's no way that you're going to live. And I had a My wife and son was 6 months old, and I kind of laughed because there was this good feeling that they'll be okay for life, because about a month earlier I'd taken out a $100,000 life insurance policy. I think I was making about $10,000 a year at the time, but you just feel lucky. Because people are in these kind of situations, and this 15-year-old kid who got up in the morning, had no idea what was ahead for him that day, and that was it. We also had a group, the fellow that was an ambulance driver in town had witnessed everything, and he got us out of town about an hour later. I don't know why we trusted him after all that, but he waved us into his home, and we took off after that. But yeah, it was quite a day, and it was everybody has 15 minutes, I guess. It was CBS News the next 2 days, and interviews and whatnot. More than anything, I just felt very, very lucky, and really felt awful for the conditions that still exist in a large sense up there. At Red Lake, very impoverished, very difficult, and some bad things that happened to the folks that live there.
It's an amazing story, and it's one that I'm very grateful that you saved some video of that. And I'm glad that we actually have the video on there. I think that some of the comments I get sometimes when I find these videos is that's a date I remember for whatever reason. I had someone involved in that. I knew someone there. It was something that changed my life somehow. In those videos, that's why I press people. If you have videotapes and you think they're not worth anything, they might be. And again, thank you for the archive, which is now coming out to tcmedianow.com right now.
I thank you as well, Tom. It's just terrific to be able to watch some of those things from so long ago. It's just great for me.
It's a quick break, Kyle. We'll come back here with Tom Hanneman of Fox Sports North on Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB.
Find out why more people come here to River Valley Ford.
Your truck headquarters in the St. Croix Valley is River Valley Ford in Baldwin. It's a great time to buy a new F-Series truck, and Ford Motor Company has made the deals too good to ignore. Outstanding factory rebates and incredible lease options mean you could be driving a new Ford truck today. Our inventory of new trucks has never been better, so stop and see us today. Shop, compare, and find out why so many of your friends and neighbors choose River Valley Ford in Baldwin.
Here's Steven, a patient at Health Source of Stillwater.
Hello, my name is Steven. I'm actually right here from Stillwater, Minnesota. It's been about a year now since I've seen Dr. Matt, and in that year, I have overcome my fear of re-injuring my back. I've injured my back about 4 times, straining my muscles. I've seen 2 other chiropractors in the past, and I've actually injured my back while seeing one of them. Dr. Matt noticed that that was my concern right away, and he said, not to worry, we'll take baby steps, and to this day, I have not injured my back.
Health Source of Stillwater. Do you Health Source?
Dentist office, may I help you?
Hi, I'd like to cancel my teeth whitening appointment.
May I ask why?
I found a teeth whitener that works in 5 minutes that I can do from home. It's called Power Swabs.
Hi, I'm John Greenhut, and if you want to whiten your teeth 2 shades in 5 minutes and 6 shades in 7 days, then try Power Swabs. Just swab your teeth and you're done. Try Power Swabs risk-free by calling 1-800-663-5838. That's 1-800-663-5838. 1-800-663-5838.
St. Paul Eye Clinic offers custom view LASIK, and for a limited time, you can receive $500 off your personalized procedure when you schedule a no-strings-attached evaluation to see if LASIK is right for you. Imagine clearer vision with less dependence on glasses or contacts. Visit stpauleye.com and click on Custom View LASIK. Schedule your Custom View LASIK evaluation. Save $500 now through March 31st at St. Paul Eye Clinic.
Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond with our guest, Tom Hanneman of Fox Sports North. Like I said, we have a studio audience today, and I want to play a little clip here, Tom, and then we're going to talk a little bit about what you're doing today. But the studio today is not too much different than this studio you worked in every mm-hmm. August. I'm Kyle, I'm going to play a little audio here from August of 85, and I think we all know what this landmark is.
Pick six pool or Wheel of Fortune. Find out why it's America's favorite game show. Next, here on Channel 4.
if not bountiful development at Canterbury Downs today.
The Pick Six pool, a record $102,000 right now at Canterbury. And people were wondering if horse racing would catch on in Minnesota. In the last week, they've had record attendance for weekday and weekend and a record total handle twice. So I guess we could say it has caught on. Canterbury Downs this week, crowds have been excellent. This afternoon, despite the rains, over 10,000 people on hand right now. One reason for that is the fact that the Pick Six pool, as we mentioned, is a whopping one.
There you go. Will horse racing catch on in Minnesota? Canterbury Downs, a solution to all of our state debt issues.
Didn't quite work out that way, but boy, just seeing Dave Moore, what a thrill for me to be able to sit at a desk and work with that guy. He was he certainly was a hero to me and a wonderful, wonderful man, so down to earth. In a business that's about ego and continues to be for a lot of folks, this was the biggest star at that station, and he had none. So if you had any and thought you were important, you weren't paying attention.
Well, and the challenge is in this market is Dave didn't ask for a lot of money, and people in this market didn't make a lot of money for a long time because, well, if Dave Moore is number one and you're number two, why am I paying you more than Dave Moore? But that State Fair booth, and by the way, everyone has gone to State Fairs marked by the Channel 4 booth, that had been a very close quarters to work in for those few warm days in August. Was it air-conditioned, that little booth in there?
It wasn't for a number of years early on, but it was a whole different experience, but it was fun because you had an audience. Normally you sit in kind of a cold studio and you've got the hot lights, but it was fun. It was interesting. You would have invariably a number of people who, how do I put this nicely? Kind of picking their nose as you're, looking at a teleprompter,
sure.
Shaking your head, thinking, really? Really? But that was fun. It was fun because you got to meet a lot of people, and that was certainly different than walking into the studio and you had the camera people and the floor director, and that was it.
You worked as FTCO until 1989. You were a weekend sportscaster or sports reporter. You were fortunate enough to be a sports reporter at one of the greatest moments of Minnesota sports history, the 87 World Series. You traveled with the team not only from when they came here from Detroit, and I think you had a number of champagne bottles and shaving cream poured onto you when they came back to the team. You got to travel with the team after they won the World Series back to Washington and see President Reagan get his Gipper jersey with the team.
It was just great. I mean, it was one of the highlights of all the years that I've been part of local sports. Just tremendous, tremendous fun to go to D.C. and Skip Loescher, who was a political reporter at CCO, was there and was a great help. But it was exciting. And, of course, this is before 9/11, when you could go to the White House and be in the background, walk around. You weren't, now you can't A, get in, or B, get close to any of it, unfortunately, because of all the changes. But to be part of that Twins 87, they say the most important time for any sports team is the first time that you get to the top, and it was for the Twins, and to be part of it, to be in three different locker room settings with champagne. And if you weren't part of the team, but for me, I'd been the low man on the totem pole. Nobody wanted to be part of the Twins starting around 1981. So all of a sudden, the young kid gets that opportunity. And to have gotten to know someone like Frank Viola and Steve Lombardozzi, Kirby Puckett, when they weren't big stars, when they were just starting out, and to continue traveling with them through 87 was a thrill.
You were with Kirby Puckett when he went to Chicago. Was it kind of a homecoming of sorts, and he had left Chicago. He worked with the Twins farm team when he first came here, came back to Chicago, and you were there with his mom, and I think you told me was one of the best moments you'd ever been at.
It was. His junior college retired his jersey. Now, you wouldn't think that's a very big deal, but we were in town, we were doing a show at the end of the news every night because the Twins were that popular and folks wanted to watch. And it turned out we were the only station that went. And Kirby, for years after, because we interviewed his mom, and when you look in her face, you saw Kirby Puckett with the same smile and the same glow. And for years, Kirby asked me, Hanny, you got that tape? You got that? And it was film, but I couldn't find it, and it has been unearthed, I'm told, since then. So I felt awful for years that it wasn't available because he wanted to see his mom.
It now exists. It's actually in the TC Media Now archives, so I hope that we'll find a way to get it to his kids, and hopefully they'll enjoy watching that. You left CCO to go work for this upstart basketball team called the NBA Timberwolves.
A bit of a change for me, and it's funny now, all these years later, working at Fox Sports North and doing Wild hockey games and Twins, I have a day doesn't go by where somebody stops me and says, "What's a basketball guy doing baseball or hockey?" I don't say it, but I'm thinking, okay, well, before you were born, I was involved with the North Stars and knew Herb Brooks well and all that. But yeah, it was a big change for me, and I wasn't real comfortable the first year. It was a challenge. It was pushing me where I wasn't comfortable, but it led to some great things, including a friendship with a guy named Kevin Harlan, who has gone on to great things nationally, he remains a good friend, we're in touch frequently, some great years. Not a lot of winning years, but some great years.
It was a good era when Kevin McHale was managing, and Flip Saunders was coaching the first time, and you had a few of the start. You had the KG, the big ticket, which apparently now is going to come back and win championships now with the team, and Cassell, and the guy who needed to feed his family. You had a couple of playoff runs during that mid period, and there seemed like there was some momentum which was happening. Didn't pan out the way it should have or could have. But.
Yeah, well, they went to the playoffs 8 consecutive years. The problem was they got knocked out in the first round almost every time. But in the 2003-2004 season, that's the gold standard for a franchise that's now over 26 years old. They not only had the best record in the Western Conference, but the feeling was they had the best team and a true chance to go to the finals. Kevin Garnett was the most valuable player in the NBA. Pretty exciting stuff. And unfortunately, Sam Cassell, who you mentioned, their point guard at the time, hurt his knee, and injuries impacted, and they lost to the Lakers and ultimately would have faced Detroit, I think a team they might have beaten. Mm-hmm. So injuries are part of sports, but that was very exciting. Since then, sadly, it's been, including this year, 11 years since they've participated in the playoffs. And that's a long, dry run, and fans in this part of the world have been very, very patient. They're 4 years away from the all-time record of the longest drought, and that's not a record you want. So hopefully they're building towards a better future.
In context, you think about the Twins and the Twins won 87. They had a good 12, 13 years of some embarrassing seasons, and change in ownership, change in management, which the Timberwolves have done the last couple of years. So maybe next year is the year, right? It could happen.
You get the right pieces, you get the right individuals. There's a young man named Andrew Wiggins who will be Rookie of the Year in the NBA, and he's certainly part of the future. But it's a great thing about sports. You figure the Yankees can buy the players and get the best possible, and that hasn't worked real well for them of late, which is a good thing. And there's always a young man who is good but isn't expected to be great, and he turns out to be great, and he impacts the team. Those are the stories we all love. The underdog, if you will, that makes a difference, and a franchise like the Wolves, who haven't been relevant at all forever, and all of a sudden, one individual comes in. You get the right draft pick, and things turn around. That's the hope, at least.
Our guest today, Tom Hammond of Fox Sports North. And Tom, you're back reporting on Twins, hockey, you're reporting everything now again. Do you like going back to reporting on a general sports menu versus just basketball?
Yes, and here's the main reason. When you have covered a Timberwolves franchise that hasn't been in the playoffs for 11 years, that's it. You're done. The season ends. It's over. You got to wait another, 7 months, 6 months to get back at it. Here you can go from a disappointing season with the Wolves to, unfortunately, maybe a disappointing season with the Twins. It has been. Should be better this year. But you've got the Wild, which is the the winning team in town now. And it's fun to be, you know, been part of the playoffs the last 2 years. It's exciting to be around individuals that are experiencing something maybe they haven't before. They're winning. Fans are into it. So for that reason alone, if you're involved with sports, you like all sports. Mm-hmm. Certainly you have favorites, but I enjoy all sports, so it's been great.
There's people in this room here, I think, who I thought when we were all young that when the Twins won two World Series in 4 years, that's just how it goes. You just wait about 3 or 4 years and there's another World Series. No one told us you have to wait about 30 years between championships. I want to play a little video clip here. This is a gentleman who I think also has a show on Fox Sports North, and this might be from 1976. We're going to play this little clip here.
Two twins have left. Have four new twins arrived.
Bert Blylevin and Danny Thompson are gone. Mm-hmm. Two new twins have arrived. Jim Gideon, the young pitcher, has gone right to the Tacoma Farm Club. Bill Singer, the veteran pitcher, pitched last night in Chicago, so he has a couple of days to get his things together.
Did he win, by the way, last night in Chicago?
He was not the winning pitcher. He wasn't involved. He was an eligible player.
Ralph, as you mentioned, there'll be two new twins in the starting lineup tonight. One of them is with me right here. The other, Mike Cubbage, is going to be starting as a designated hitter tonight. This is Roy Smalley, second baseman who came to us yesterday. Roy, first of all, welcome to the Twin Cities and the Minnesota Twins.
Thank you very much, Tom. It's good to be here.
What was your reaction yesterday when you heard the news that you've been traded?
Well, I was relieved, to tell you the truth, because I was glad the ordeal was over. I had heard the rumors for about a week and a half that something was going to happen, and I went to sleep every night, or as the case may be, didn't go to sleep at night, wondering whether I was going to be a Minnesota Twin or a Texas Ranger the next day. And so I was kind of prepared for it, and now that it's over with, I'm relieved that it's over with, and I just couldn't be happier about playing shortstop and playing for Gene Mauch and the Minnesota Twins.
You've been starting at second base for Texas now. I hear Gene Mauch is planning to put you in the shortstop position tonight. Is that going to be a difficult adjustment for you?
No, I'm a shortstop. The difficult adjustment was playing second base for Texas. I've played shortstop all my life, and that's the position I want to play. That's the position I play the best, and I hope I can do the job. I think I can.
Well, most of the fans know that Gene Mauch, Twins manager, is your uncle. Was he a help at all to you in your struggle to make the major leagues?
Oh, yeah. He's been a help to me since I was 4 or 5 years old and talked about wanting to be a professional baseball player when I grew up. Both he and my dad being ball players and the great baseball men and teachers that they are, I've just had a wealth of knowledge to grow up with, and it's been a tremendous advantage.
Imagine you're looking forward to playing with him.
Absolutely. Always have. It's been a dream.
Thank you very much, Roy. With photographer Larry Kohout, this is Tom Hanneman live from Met Stadium.
There you go.
Boy, I'm glad that people couldn't see what I was wearing. And then the visual of Roy with his mustache and the fun thing about going back through some of these tapes, which you've been kind enough to change formats from so that we can view them, it's good and bad. I mean, you're in 1976, I guess, understandably, I was pretty raw. But great to have that memory and you know, that was the second live shot I ever did in my life, and the first was the night before when Roy was at the airport. He has no memory of any of this, by the way, but I remember both very, very distinctly.
He may have to refresh his memory with some video. He may, enjoy,
yeah,
he
yeah.
may want to see this mustache number five. That's a good look. When you look back at interviewing athletes in that period, you're interviewing athletes who are making what we'd call middle incomes. You weren't interviewing millionaires at this point. Has that dynamic changed a little bit? I know that most athletes are going to be, you know, be professional around journalists, but you weren't interviewing multimillionaires when you're even interviewing Killebrew, even we'll take the Tommy Kramers of the world. These are guys that were doing well for themselves, but mm-hmm. professional sports had not taken off as far as making, you know, big contracts. And I mean, Adrian Peterson made $1 million a game this year to not play. This wasn't the case when you were covering, especially Minnesota sports.
Money does change some people, and it would be true not only in athletics but anywhere else. But it does make a difference with a number of people. But a couple of things have occurred too. You have a more media savvy athlete out there now, mm-hmm. who teams and leagues are working with and training to work with us knuckleheads and to do a better job. Back then, there wasn't the concern. And someone like Roy Smalley, very intelligent man, hardworking individual. Wasn't really concerned about that, and obviously did a terrific job in every interview he has ever done, continues to, and continues to correct me, by the way, with some of my questions. So that's not a bad thing at all. It has made it a difference. Fans have changed as well. Fans are far more savvy. It's become, in every sport, analytics have taken on the numbers, the layers of statistical stuff, which probably were a part of baseball. Baseball's about history and what someone did 15, 30 years ago in a game, and a foul ball that was caught, or the odd situation, a rundown I'll never forget. Sports has changed. They have evolved just as everything else in this world has, I think the athletes were probably a little bit more down home back then than they are today. They're, as you say, in this world where whatever you say, whether it's on radio, whether it's on television, it's going to be used again. And if you mess up, believe me, it will be found in many formats forever.
Yeah, you take like how many of the Vikings Super Bowls that they were in, four of them, and these were afternoon games too, right? But the Super Bowl's afternoon games when the Minnesota Vikings were in them. And I unfortunately can't post the Vikings Super Bowl games to TCBDnow.com. I don't think I want to work with the NFL on those negotiating rights.
No.
Unfortunately, but I do view them, and I'm watching through them, and they were games. They were games, and they had a halftime show of a local band came in. They played When the Saints Go Marching In, they walked off. There was no, you know, John Denver didn't come out and do a halftime show. It was pretty much a football game, and pretty much it was only for football fans. It was not for the, I mean, the Super Bowl today is an event, which I think it's about 2% football, about 98% commercials and entertainment.
Oh, it's changed. My dad was at the first Super Bowl ever in Los Angeles, and boy, you look at the program for that. Look at the price of the ticket, $25. I mean, you know, you're talking $700-$800, and we're not talking suites here.
No,
everything has changed. It is an event. It is a show. No one like Katy Perry probably would have been very interested in appearing at any of that. Had you asked the Beatles or the Rolling Stones in '67, they would have laughed,
right?
Or said, "All right, for $1 million or $100,000," and that wouldn't have happened. The budget wasn't there.
You did the in 1985 when the Notre Dame was only 3 years old, which now is gone. Minnesota was awarded the All-Star Game in '85, and you covered the All-Star Game in '85. You also covered the All-Star Game in 2014 for Fox Sports. Tell me a little bit about it. Was it kind of deja vu going back and covering another All-Star Game, a new stadium, and everyone? I have these videos from the Notre Dame, and they do the profiles of how great this place is going to be for football and baseball and the Strikers and for everyone else that was going to come into the stadium. And now it was leveled. I think about 10 years after the Dome was built, we hated it. Now you're at Target Field, which is a great field. Wish we had some better baseball on Target Field, but it's a great field. Did you sense, again, a little bit of, wait a second, we already went through this whole thing again now. A great field, they're doing the stories on what everything means, and you bring people through it.
Absolutely, but the difference was this time you got it right with the stadium. It was someone that spent time at Met Stadium, great memories of being outdoors. I mean, for those of us, all of us cooped up throughout the winter to be outside, and yeah, it can get chilly a little bit early on and in the season. Doesn't matter. You're out outdoors, and Dave Moore himself would not go to games inside. He just protested it, didn't want to make a big deal about it, but, you know, it just wasn't baseball to him. Yeah, and the fun this last time, last summer, is something I didn't have before. We had access to 40 years of great individuals, great names in baseball, and we had the opportunity to take, I was on the air for 8 hours at a time, so if you needed 15 minutes, you had 15 minutes, and to get into life stories of some of these individuals really was fun, and amazing things that some of these guys who are Hall of Famers went through as kids, and some of them certainly are. They remain superstars to this day. So that was kind of fun to see that fans were really into it, still excited. Baseball, the allegiance that fans have for that game is unlike any other.
Kyle, let's take a quick break. We'll take our final break here on Flashback Twin Cities with our guest, Tom Hanneman of Fox Sports Net.
It's Macy's Super Saturday Sale with all-day special Saturday. Take 65% off all 10 and 14 karat gold earrings. Clearance dress shirts and ties now 70% off. Save 85% on clearance shoes and boots for her. Juniors collections and girls' dresses now 50% off. And 7-piece jacquard and embroidered comforter sets just $59.99. Macy's Super Saturday Sale. Plus now you can buy online and pick up in-store. Savings off regular sale and clearance prices. Exclusions apply.
Hello, Kill for the Viking here for Viking Meadows Golf Club. Half mile off of Highway 65 in East Bethel. Viking Meadows is a beautiful USGA course. As a Viking, you know I appreciate beauty. But there's something else, something special about this course. When I get out there, my drives are longer, my shots are straighter. Maybe it's me. Maybe it's the name. Maybe it's the course. Viking Meadows in East Bethel. Book a tee time at VikingMeadows.com.
Club 1220 KLBB presents the Community Calendar. The Phipps Dance Company celebrates its 10th season with a showcase performance this afternoon at 2 at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. Visit thephipps.org for ticket information. The comedy The Foreigner is on stage for a final weekend at the Lakeshore Players Theater in White Bear Lake. For tickets, visit lakeshoreplayers.com. Five writers nominated for the Minnesota Book Awards are speaking this afternoon until 4 at the Forest Lake Library. To learn more, visit the Washington County Library website. The Alzheimer's Association is sponsoring a day-long program on Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia this Tuesday at the WITC campus in New Richmond. To pre-register, visit the WITC website. If you have an item for KLBB's community calendar, you can send it to me, Jeff, at klbbradio.com.
Classic Twin Cities, Tom Osmond here. I got some audio play. You've given a lot of great accolades to Dave Moore, and this little clip here, I'm not sure if you've seen this yet or not, but this is the Grenville State Fair in 1977. This is Dave Moore discussing the Channel 4 softball team, and you may even see Tom Hanneman in this clip.
Six times the WCCO-TV Wildcats have played the Govs team, now known by appointment as Wendy's Winners. Today we went to Parade Stadium looking for our second victory. Well, at least we made a game of it. And our outfield defense was just fine. First inning, three up, three down, culminated by this fine running catch by sports reporter Tom Hanneman. Here comes Moore, looking for the walk. He was aided by a strong wind and an obviously nervous Senator Anderson. Ball three. And ball four. Moore has managed to work this trick a few times this year with the help of sympathetic umpires. Here comes His Excellency. Wham. Wow, he really got a hold of that one. Next batter, wham. Next, wham. The senator again, wham. Look at that smart aleck. Smart aleck, smart aleck, smart aleck. Well, he's a good sport, and he thanked us for showing up. 12-10, and it is the best game we played all year, and they thought we were just out there fooling around, but we were playing hard. Back at 10 tonight with the scene tonight.
You know, the governor, Senator Anderson, he's wearing a button shirt and a nice pants there. He wasn't looking to get too dirty, doesn't look like that.
No, but white belt and white really trendy back then. That CCO softball team was one of the great loves of Dave Moore, who loved baseball / softball, and it allowed him a chance to get out and run around and enjoy things, and we had great fun just being part of that team.
Does it when you go to work, Dave, do you ever feel like it's work, or are you doing what you love? I mean, from day one to not talking about the tragic moment we talked about a little while ago, but when you're covering sports or when you're doing what you do now, do you feel like you dread it, or to this day does the same kind of enthusiasm you had from day one?
Honestly, I think the reality for all of us, because we hear and we were told in high school, if you do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life. That's not true. I love what I do, yeah, but there are days that are very stressful and very long, you know. With the twin stuff, people think you just show up, and I wish I were that good. My job entails putting together 5-6 pages of analytics, exotic numbers that Roy and Tim Laudner and Jack Morris maybe are interested to spark some conversation. Well, I'm up until 3:30 4 in the morning, honestly, every game night doing that, because you get home at midnight and it just takes some time for me. Do I enjoy it? Yeah, I love it. What I love more than anything are going to the games, sitting next to an analyst who was an ex-major leaguer, or, you know, Wes Walls with the Wild is terrific. Tom Chorsky, Ben Clymer, people who played the game, so I can ask a lot of dumb questions and learn more about, you think you know everything about it, you don't. Mm-hmm. When you're dealing with players, that's fun. And then performing. Performing is great. Just doing the show, it's live, there's no script. It's ad-lib. That is very different than the television news experience, and continues to be. So it's a challenge, and I like that.
Do you find that it's, you know, I'm not saying the word easy, but do you feel that the technology we have today, and you're doing reporting, do you find that there is some ease of being able to do your job now today than versus, we'll even call it 20 years ago, carrying around a lot of heavy equipment on scene, waiting for video to be edited and processed? You can do some stories in some fast time now.
Yeah, you still have to look through all the video that's been shot, mm-hmm. so that, you know, there are reporters that will pre-write a story. You can't do that. Right. You know, you go out, and if you're doing it, depending on what story you're doing, if it's a feature piece on kids baseball, for instance, mm-hmm. you got to look at the video so that you can write to what you have. So that hasn't changed in terms of time. You don't have to wait for film to be processed. That's nice. There are some advantages, certainly, with a computer, yep. that just are there. I don't see anyone carrying typewriters anymore, and VCRs don't seem to be real popular either. So, yeah, there's some advances that have helped a great deal.
And you're on Twitter, right? So
yes.
We can follow you at
FSN Tom Hanneman.
And where will we see you this week? What games are coming up this week?
Well, I'll continue with the Timberwolves tomorrow night. They are taking on at home Charlotte, and then they're on the road. And we've got a Twins preview show that we're taping on Monday. Looking forward to that with Tim Laudner. Wild coming up. The Twins will be starting. I'll be involved with all of that, and I'll continue to do what I'm told.
That's great. Tom Hanneman, Fox Sports North. And by the way, if you want to see Tom in his in an earlier career, go to tcmedianow.com. And again, a real quick plug, if you would, I would encourage everyone to come to Newsapalooza May 7th. It is a fundraiser for tcmedianow.com, which is a 501c3, so your $15 ticket is actually tax deductible. And how cool is that? We'll be playing a variety of video. We'll have a panel of media guests. You can answer your questions. Have your questions answered. And maybe even have some inside stories that can't be told on the radio, but can be told in live audience. So, Newsapalooza 2, another evening history and humor. Tickets for sale at tcmedianow.com. Tom, thanks again for being on Flashback Twin Cities. I hope we'll do this again sometime.
I look forward to it, Tom. I thank you for all that you have done, and really can't thank you enough.
And some of you guys can clap now as we have a studio audience. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, we'll be back next Saturday here on KLBB Club 1220.